properties of the Houston toy.
Well, I'm not the inventor, so I certainly didn't have an opportunity to test it. And it would probably need a rather sophisticated lab if you're looking for somewhat esoteric semiconductor characteristics under RF. But, you know, someone wants to do the research, it's a free country.
Check. Roy, thank you. KD2FIU clear. Thanks, Roy.
Okay, very good, George. Chet, did you want to say something?
Yes, Jay, about your invention, I just thought of another application. You're talking about transmitting a signal. I'm thinking of your invention, if you can perfect it, but I think you already have, is a radio directional finder, so that you could, let's say, you want to find a signal. Remember back in World War II, the Germans were driving around with these directional finders, and I think they needed probably two different directions from two different mobile units, and they would communicate to get it fixed. But your antenna with a 3 dB aperture, that would be a fantastic radio directional finding item. Go ahead.
Yes, Chuck, I agree with you. That would be an excellent way to do direction finding. Much more accurate than the old direction finders they used during the war. They don't compare they don't compare in the beam width. Even if you might remember the four antennas you would see on police cars, LoJack, you remember LoJack for finding stolen cars that had a little LoJack transmitter? It was not that accurate. It was not that easy to find. But with this concept, it would be much, you'd be able to find a stolen car quicker. Go ahead, Jed.
Well, I think you hit on something, Jay, that maybe you didn't realize. I mean, you're all thinking, you're all knowing, and you're a brilliant man, but I'm not so sure you were thinking about radio direction finding, but I hope I spurred you on, Jay, to such things. There's so many different uses for your antenna. It's incredible, and I'm so happy that you came on the air here and you were pointing out what the antenna that you built. I know you're so busy, possibly that's the reason why you haven't really got into studying the aspects of your antenna, because you have so many irons in the fire. But this is an unusual, absolutely brilliant antenna with so many different possibilities that it's just truly amazing, Jay. My hat is off to you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Rich?
Yeah, Rich. What do you want to ask him?
How long was the driven element of the vertical, and was the carbon fiber tube just as long as that?
Well, yeah, the first version was the 2 meter version, and it was a quarter wave magma about 19 inches long, and the tube was about 1 inch longer.
Okay, but if you want to do like a 20 meter version or whatever, you'd have to have a very long carbon fiber tube, right?
Yeah, it would have to be slightly longer than the actual radiating element, the vertical radiating element. Quarter wave on 20 meters is about 16 or 17 feet.
Why slightly longer as opposed to the exact same size?
Well, I didn't experiment with the exact. That was just a an assumption of mine. I felt that it would give a better shielding effect if it was a little higher than the end of the antenna. So, you know, it could be if you make it the exact same height, you'd get the same effects.
Coming.
Okay, thank you.
Copy, West 2N.
Okay, Wesley first, then Poole.
Interesting. What is the difference between the slotted lines and the small microwave measurement of the quarter wave length? Which one I have? The length of edge heat in my lab and the slotted antenna. That so we assume that we have the same quarter wavelength. What would be the difference between the two?
Roy, I didn't get that exactly. Could you give me? I'm not hearing him that well.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not quite sure. He's alluding to he has a slotted line, which is a different thing entirely. And he seems to want to compare the slotted line with your quarter wave driven element. Could you kind of restate it, Wesley, a little bit slowly?
Yeah, that's the limitation of my English. So we're talking about the slotted line used for microwave measurement that consists of movable probe insert into the slot in transmission line. But then if we talking about waveguide, it is a transmission line as well. I'm trying to see what is the difference between the two, the antenna with the slot and the slotted line and direction.
Okay, did you get it this time, Jay?
Yeah, I've never fooled around with slotted lines, so I really, I could not answer that question. I'm sorry about that. There's one thing I've learned a long time ago. If you don't know the answer, admit it. I don't know the answer to your question. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, very good. That's a good thing to do. You don't want to end up trying to explain something by just making it out of whole cloth, which I've heard people do in the past, and it's not a pretty sight. Paul, you wanted to ask something.
Yeah, okay, Roy, thanks. Jay, you have this tube, I think you said 2 inches in diameter, and it might as well be, you know, 10 feet long, depending on what antenna you're using it for. But now you've got to make this 1/16th inch wide slot. What tool do you use for that? You know, I envision putting this pipe, you know, in a vise and taking a grinder with a cutting wheel and just running it, you know, freehand all the way down, you know, from one end to the other. I'm just wondering how you accomplished it. How you made a nice straight line like that. What tool did you use? How hard or difficult was it? Back to you, Jay.
I used a simple table saw with a guide. So I just pressed the tube against the guide and just moved it right through the saw as the blade was spinning. Doing it by hand, you might get an irregular cut. It might give you a regular antenna pattern.
Okay, so that's why I asked. Okay, very good. And I had no problem with the carbon, like, gumming up and fouling the blade or anything like that. It went through nicely.
No, I didn't have any problem with the carbon fiber gumming up the blade.
Fine business. Thanks, Jay. Roy, over to you.
One more.
Okay, Wesley, what's your one more?
Impedance matching. What is the impedance of the antenna? And how do you make the impedance match so that it meets Trinity on them?
Question about impedance matching?
That is correct.
And there was a small change in the impedance in the SWR, but I found it to be insignificant, believe it or not, which surprised me. So I did not have to do any antenna matching. It could be if you go into the UHF ranges, the mismatch might be much worse. But at 2 meters and at on a 20-meter band, it was fairly insignificant.
Does the wire have to be in the middle of the pipe? And if so, how do you make it to be in the middle?
Yeah, I think the problem is maybe you can talk a little closer to the mic, because it seems like you're, compared to all the other fellows transmitting, your audio seems quite low.
I'm sorry about it. I can speak a little bit up. the question was how practically the wire was placed there. That means, If the wire has to be in the middle of the pipe, how it is practically done, or if it doesn't have to be in the middle of the pipe, could you just provide the information?
Yeah, I thought it. At first I was going to make little sort of rubber spacers that would be the size of the inside the diameter of the pipe. But I said, let me try it without it. On the 2 meter model, it was stiff. The mag mount was a stiff wire, so there was no problem keeping the tube set so that the vertical wire was centered. But when I tried it on 20, I just put it up and it was working fine, so I didn't bother fooling around with spacers. Okay, any other people with a question?
Hey, 1MF.
B2BXO.
I think I heard two people. It might have been N1FM. If you want to try again, I also heard you, Frank. So you're up on the list. But was there an N1FM? It was very difficult to read the call sign.
Kilowatt 1, Mike Foxtrot.
Okay. Ask Jay your question.
Okay. Jay, I know you're from the Norwalk Club when you're president. But anyway, the carbon fiber tube, can it touch the radiating element, or does the diameter of the tube have to be larger so that it do not make contact?
Yeah, well, I use a 2-inch tube, and on the 20-meter vertical, it was wire, and it possibly made contact. I'm not sure. It possibly did. But the performance was still excellent, so I did not worry about it any further. Who was the other station that came in?
The other station was Frank through Echo Link, so you got to leave the push to talk for a little while so that he can get into the conversation.
Okay, very good. Yeah, Jay, again, you have 3 degrees. Be careful to say degree, not dB. 3-degree bandwidth at HF is phenomenal. I don't know that any of us have heard that before. Is that a 6 dB bandwidth? I think that's what beams are typically measured at, but I've never actually used a beam antenna, so I or studied them, so I may be mistaken. And I would think also that maybe tell me what you've observed empirically. I would think a three degree bandwidth if a significant drop off in dB, that is in power at the edge of that 3 degree beam. I would think that would be very difficult to operate on HF, even though it sounds like mechanically you can build it, because HF signals probably don't consistently come through at the same angle. It probably varies some. You have a lot of multipath, and it changes. So I would imagine you've got some heavy fading on, say, a path from Europe.
Let me ask you, I have another question which I'm not remembering right now, but go ahead and answer that, and then I may have another question. Do you want to ask your other question now, or do you want me to reply to the first question?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jay. Go ahead and reply to the first question. I'm not sure I was all that clear. What are you?
Okay, this is NE2Q. The question you first asked about is beam width, not bandwidth. Beam width. And it's the vertical beam width. What I think you were talking about with regard to fading is angle of arrival or takeoff angle. And yes, that does affect your antenna performance or reception or transmission, angle of arrival. But this antenna really, it's affected by angle of arrival, just like any directional antenna or non-directional antenna. The angle of arrival is has to be considered if you're thinking about predicting propagation. Okay, Roy. Well, I think we should take another two questions, and then I'll get into the actual concept of the antenna. I was going to explain. Go ahead, Roy.
Let me have one.
Hold on for a second, Wes. I think what we'll do is Howie, WB2HWW through All Star, was trying to be recognized. So Howie is first, and then Wesley will be last. How's that? So, Howie, what's your question or comment?
All right, thank you. NE2QWDHWW, name is Howard. Question is this. Carbon fiber. When the signal hits the carbon fiber, what is the carbon fiber doing to it? Is it absorbing it, or is it reflecting it? Now, I've got to look that up. So you're saying that carbon fiber is like a shield? Because what you're saying is that the signal only comes out through the opening. So can you explain what is exactly happening? When the RF signal hits it, is it being reflected around the out the slot? Go ahead, WDHHWW. And it doesn't turn into the RF into heat when it hits the tube?
Good evening, Howard. Well, to tell you the truth, I did not measure if the tube got warm. It's possible there was a little heat generated. And I'll tell you, I really don't know exactly what's happening. All I can tell you is what the results are. And that's why I wrote the article. So I can't give you any further details on what's going on inside that tube. Okay, and who is the other question? Who was that? That'll be the last question.
That'll be Wesley.
Yeah. Okay, when you took the comparison between the Yagi antenna and your vertical dipole, slotted dipole, or whichever way we call it, was your Yagi antenna vertically polarized or horizontally polarized in that comparison? And to exchange.
Okay, the Yagi was horizontally polarized. It was horizontally and it polarized. And it was about 60 feet above the ground. Okay. Roy, are we ready to give out the... I'll give out my explanation here in a moment.
WKW with another question, please.
Okay, Howard, one more question, and then we'll progress.
Did you take measurements or talk to stations at a distance or, you know, go 5 miles away and go in a circle to see what the signal was like compared to just a plain old vertical? That's the question. Because if the signal goes up in here, it's not reflecting. That's the question. So my question is this. Did you actually go out in the distance, not only take fields, near-field field strength readings at 30 or 40 or 50 feet, you know, but did you go out a mile or two and see what the signal was?
The only tests I did, local tests, were with field strength at 50 feet. That was on the 2-meter version. The one that was on top of my car. And the only other test I did was on the air with the 20-meter ground plane. Okay, that's it. I am now going to give a little further detail about the article, and it might answer a lot of your questions. Any 2Q. First, I would suggest you all get a piece of paper and a pen or pencil and write down the name of the antenna. The antenna shown in the article, and most of you probably haven't seen the article, so it's sort of unfair that you only heard me voice the name of the antenna. The name of the antenna is, so I'd like you to write it down, is LOOF, that's L-O-O-F, LIRPA, that's L-I-R-P-A, LOOF, LIRPA, SLUT. Once you have that written down, I want you to all look at that name and study it carefully. Keep looking at the name. And as soon as somebody gets a thought, come back on the air.
AF2P.
April Fool.
Go ahead.
April Fool.
Yeah, apparently you guys didn't read a lot of QSTs. I've been reading them off and on since the 70s. April Fool antenna articles are infamous. A couple of years ago, they had something, it was a takeoff of a J-pole. They called it a Q-pole.
Yes, gentlemen, sorry that I fooled you, but it is April, and as Roy said, every issue of QST does have an April Fool article. This was the 2025 April Fool article. So if you feel, don't feel embarrassed, I received over 100 emails, quite a few from electrical engineers, some have with PhDs in electrical engineering, and virtually everyone, I would say 98% of the people who wrote to me, were asking technical questions on how to build it, and how did I cut the carbon fiber? Did I use a diamond-tipped saw blade? Where did I purchase the carbon fiber? Chet was the one who asked me to come on tonight and talk about the article and see if we could pull your legs for a little bit. So I think... we did. I hope you're smiling, and don't feel bad, because I was on 40 meters the other night talking to a friend who was probably one of the foremost antenna designers in the world, and he said, "Jay, you fooled me until I saw it was the April issue." Roy, go ahead.
WB2HWW. Yeah, Howard, you got to kind of slow down with the quick gig. I appreciate your enthusiasm, and you'll get a chance to talk. I owe you a chance to talk. But you're talking over me, that's not a good thing to do with a net control operator. It's not a good thing for a generic participant. So we'll give you a little bit of a chance. So, Jay, I just wanted to say thank you so much. This is a kind of rare opportunity. Every so often around April, I kind of think of doing an April Fool's thing, but, you know, we're never on a Sunday that's the 1st of April, so I guess I just kind of lapse into a little laziness. So I thank you very much. I hope you give the guys an opportunity to respond. Keep in mind, you know, this is all radio, so they can't throw a rotten tomato or anything like that. So, Howard, what did you want to say?
The first thing is I didn't need to step on you, but the way you have All-Star here is full duplex. So, I key up and it takes a half a second, so it's not like working on the radio. Second, I knew that right away. I was asking those questions about heat, trying to be polite, because I didn't know if this was an April Fool's joke, and I didn't want to be rude. But I asked you, what happened to the signal? Did it go up in heat? Back to you, Raj, WDHWW. But again, the way you got this All-Star set up is that it's full duplex. Nobody means to be rude.
I understand that, Howard, but you got to kind of slow down a little bit because you kind of speed up a lot. And unfortunately, I didn't set this up. I'm simply operating through Limark's All-Star node. That's all that I'm doing. I haven't set it for a duplex, or I haven't set it for anything. I don't run the repeater. I just run a net.
AF2P, Thomas.
Yes, please.
I thought Jay did a masterful job. I loved it. Thank you.
Great. It's all meant in fun. So, I mean, no one should get upset over something like that. It was a good time. I enjoyed it. Anyone else with any comments?
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
You have wasted my time.
I do appreciate very much. It was an excellent subject to discuss.
WA2VDH with a comment.
Yes, John?
Yeah, this was interesting. I think it's good that it gets us thinking. When I heard the 3-degree beam width, that is pretty narrow. And I was also wondering if carbon fiber, being a lossy material, but again, this is all good. It gets the gray cells working.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is a good thing to kind of throw in some random data and have it bounce around in your brain for a little while as a cleaner.
Oh, it bounces around between the carbon fiber and the radiating element.
Yeah. Anyone else with any comments before we move on?
Any 2 kill.
Okay, that was doubling or tripling. Jay, did you want to say something?
Yes. I thank you all for listening. I hope I didn't disappoint you too much, but it was all meant in fun and get you thinking a little bit. As I mentioned, a lot of people wrote to me, and 98% thought it was the real thing. So don't feel like you were that you were the only one that got fooled by it. I do a lot of experiments with antennas. I've designed quite a few different types of antennas, Yagis, verticals, quads, and I'm always playing around with antennas, so if anybody does have any serious questions, I'll try to answer them if I can. Go ahead, Roy. Any 2Q.
I do, Roy. I have a serious question.
That's okay. Don't waste my time.
That's not nice. Intuition. It's not nice. It's a wonderful subject to discuss. I do appreciate the author of that article of coming here very much. It was excellent to see how the brains of the people work. Intuition.
Time is important. Garbage.
Look, everyone is free to their own opinion. We mean no harm. Someone wanted to ask Jay a question, whoever that might be. Try again.
Try again, sir.
Yeah, I did, Roy. I'm number one on the list anyway for a serious antenna question.
Okay, Rich. Ask Jay.
Okay, Roy and I were talking about this a couple of days ago on the phone. I'm about to embark on building a vertical. I purchased a 25-foot adjustable whip. And first, to get the nomenclature out of the way, if you have a whip, a vertical whip, and you put a 40-meter coil attached to the bottom of the whip, what kind of vertical is that? Go ahead, Jay.
I think I understand you have a 24-foot vertical radiator and you have a coil, a 40-meter coil on the bottom. It's when you ask what kind of a whip is it, it's a loaded whip, a loaded antenna. If it's designed correctly, it should work fine on 40 meters. Of course, you're going to need some radials. If it's ground mounted, you should have put a lot of radials out there. If you, the higher up you put it, the less radials usually you need. Get it up a half wave high, you probably get by with 3 or 4. I hope I answered that question.
Yes, you did. Now, if you add a 56-to-1 Dallin or Un-Un to the bottom of that antenna, doesn't that turn it into a vertical N-fed half wave?
Well, I think what you have there is a quarter wave antenna. a full size, a quarter wave on 40 meters would be, 33 feet. So you said, I think, 24 feet, and the loading coil makes up the rest of the antenna. It's still a quarter wave antenna, and you're going to need radials to operate it. If it's electrically a half wave, then you could call it a half wave end-fed antenna. There's a lot of names for the same antenna: end-fed, vertical, horizontal, dipole. There's a lot of the same antenna with many different names.
Okay, and the last addition to it is a one-to-one balun to eliminate the common mode. So it's a choke. So you have the whip, it's 25 feet, and it's adjustable down to 3 feet, believe it or not. And then you have, attached to the whip, you have the 56-to-1 transformer, and attached to that, or on top of that really, you have the 40-meter coil, and then the choke. So there are four components. There's the vertical whip, there's the 56-to-1 un-un, there's the 1-to-1 choke, and there's the 40-meter coil. I'm not quite sure. I think the 40, Roy was saying, and I agree, the 40-meter coil should be the first one attached to the whip. And then under that, I don't know if it matters whether the 56-to-1 un-un comes, and then the choke, or the choke, and then the 56-to-1. And yes, there's a counterpoise. The way this guy designed the antenna, there are two 17-foot counterpoises, and the antenna was about 5 feet off the ground. Jay, go ahead.
Well, this is, I like the practical method first. I would put it up with just the whip and the 40-meter coil, and then the radials installed, and then see what you take an analyzer and see what you've got, see what your impedance is, what your reactance is, and get the length of the. You might have to adjust the length of the whip until you get zero reactance. Also known as resonance, at the target frequency where you plan to operate it. And once you see what your impedance is, then you'll know if you need a 56-to-1, a 9-to-1. You know, it's hard to tell, you know, without actually, you know, modeling it, testing it. But I think the best thing to do is just put it up with the coil on it, and then right at the bottom of the coil, read it with your analyzer with a very short piece, maybe like a couple of inch piece of coax from the analyzer right into the bottom of that coil. Do you agree with that, Roy?
Yeah, that was sort of one of my many messages to him. I was trying to explain that what determines what kind of a balun you need is based upon the electrical length of the antenna. If it's a legitimate resonant half wave, the impedance will probably be something between 2,000 to 3,000. If it's less than a half wave, it'll have a lower impedance, and it might use a 9-to-1. If it was a quarter wave, then you're basically dealing with a quarter wave vertical, and it's 50 ohms. So you don't need a balun, although if you want to, you know, make sure that everything isn't going to kind of go down your coax, you could use one. But Yeah, that's one of the answers that I gave him, because we kind of banged that repeatedly through the night.
Is the choke necessary in all instances or not?
Vertically antennae, if it's elevated and you've got the proper number of radials and at the right size, usually you do not need a choke. It can't hurt to put one in. It's not going to deteriorate anything. The ground plane antennas, the radials are usually very effective if they're the proper length at eliminating virtually most common modes. But, you know, when you use a vertical antenna without radials and you have no choke, then the shield on the coax, the outer part of the shield, many times will become part of the antenna. You'll have all sorts of carbonode floating on the coax shield and go right into your shack.
Yeah. It's becoming clearer and clearer now, but I totally understand what you said about the simplest way to go about it is just add a coil and take your readings, and then from there experiment with the choke and the balance or the transformer, which is better way to put it, not a balance, a transformer, and the choke. So that's what I'm going to do. Now I just have to wind the 40 meter coil. I want to wind a 40 and 80 meter coil with bullet plugs, so you could, you know, detach or add one of the coils depending if you want to go on 40 or 80. So thanks, Jay. W2BZ. Back to Roy.
AC2GS. Okay, very good, Rich. Thank you so much, Jay. Anyone else have any kind of questions for Jay tonight? Okay, I guess not. Jay, I just once again want to thank you so much for coming by. I really do appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. You're always welcome.
Okay, well, I had a lot of fun, and I hope everybody else did, and I hope everybody's brain was in motion, and all those brain cells were hopping around. And anybody ever tell you that they have a loof lerpa antenna, you'll know what they mean. All right, good night, and thank you very much. This is NE2Q. Back to Ned.
Okay, thanks again, Jay. And thank you, Chet, as well. You're the guy who engineered all this, so if you want to take a bow.
Okay. I'm so glad it took place. It was a lot of fun. I added a few things in there I thought that might, in case the antenna did work. What it could do in other areas there, but it was a lot of fun. Jay was quite the gentleman, but he's always quite the gentleman. Everybody should know he is a wonderful person. And he's a couple of years older than me. I just turned 80. And between the two of us, we have like 130 years on the air, something like that, between the two of us as ham radio operators. And it's a lot of fun. I think most of the fun really comes ham radio for us, between Jay and me, is going on HF and building antennas and talking around the world. And Jay tries to do it a little in a difficult way. I mentioned in my preamble there that he works a guy in Australia several times a week on a SCAD, I believe. And he doesn't do it the direct way. directly from his QTH to Australia. He does it the opposite way, wrong path. And why does he do that? Because it's fun to be able to reach somebody and add another 10,000 miles to your transmission. Many people would say, I just want a good big signal to get to Australia. But it's so much fun to try to do it the hard way. And that's what I do. I build things that nobody else wants and would ever want to build or have. And it's in my garage. That's my toy. And I'm always adding things to it. For whatever reason, just to amuse myself. So it keeps the brain going. And Jay's a wonderful fella up Pound Ridge, New York. And I really appreciate him being a good buddy there. And a nice fellow to come on the air and entertain us tonight. So, Jay, if you're listening, thank you very much for popping by. And we'll be talking soon. 73's and back to Roy, WB2 Alpha Hotel Kilo.
Okay, 73. One of my favorite aspects of this hobby is the opportunity to talk to interesting people, and I have certainly accomplished that this night. So I thank you again for that, Chip.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Togi Doke, 73. On to Rich. Do you have any remaining questions, or did you kind of shoot it off to Jay earlier?
No, I pretty much have it figured out. Jay answered a bunch of the questions, especially the important one. Start with the 40-meter coil and nothing else and see what happens. And, you know, I have infinite possibilities because I have a whip that goes from 3 feet long to 25 feet long and everywhere in between, so I hope I'm not chasing one thing with the whip and then another thing with another length of the whip and whatever. But no, I between you, Roy, and Jay, I have it pretty much figured out now. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Rich. I'm glad. As always, I wish you all the luck with that antenna. I hope you enjoy it for many, many years, and I hope it goes all over the place in the world.
Well, I also, the reason I'm doing it, actually, is because I want to do it for portable use. That's basically to get me out of the house and away from my shack. I'd like to put that thing on a tripod in the car and go out in the fresh air this spring and summer with that antenna. And I bought myself a Zygu, if that's the way you pronounce it, G90 20-watt radio to do mostly CW, portable CW. That's why I'm putting this whole thing together to do portable CW, Roy. Go ahead.
Well, I wish you well. I wish you good luck with it. It depends. The Chinese pronounce that, I think, Shibu. The XI is pronounced SH. But I've heard it pronounced the way you pronounce it in the United States, and we live in the United States. So either term works.
I've heard it pronounced five different ways already. I got a really good deal on it because Radiodity had one price when you Googled it and then another price when you went to their website. So I called them on it and they gave me the lower price.
Oh, good. I mean, unfortunately, there's more than a few retailers that pull this nonsense. Where they have it advertised in different places for different prices, and if you call them on it, they'll say that it's a marketing exercise instead of just a way to squeeze a couple extra bucks out of people.
They said it's a mistake. It's a Google's mistake. They said I took a screenshot of it, and but they were very nice about it. They just offered me, it was $45 difference, so it wasn't a small difference. And so they were very nice about it, which was fortunate. I didn't expect them to give me anything off, but they did.
Well, in the end, I'm sure they still made a profit. Not quite as much, but they still made a profit. You know, the Chinese almost give these things away for some strange reason that I've yet to figure out. But those days are coming to an end. I've already seen notifications all over the place. I saw a product being advertised on Amazon, and there was a little blurb at the bottom, and it said 99% probability that the price will soon go up. So, yeah, that's going to happen to a lot of products on Amazon's pages.
Stop your B2BXO with a question.
Sure.
Now, did I understand that, and I may have missed something, but that you wanted to operate this without radios, or you could put radios on the antenna?
The way it was designed by this guy who Roy hates, we won't get into that tonight, though, Roy. He has two counterpoises, anywhere from 90 degrees to 180 degrees apart. For 20 meters, they're 17 feet long. So I don't plan on putting any more of that. I can't do it on my HOA where I live. I can't put more than two counterpoises on it. But for portable operation, I could use more. So I'll see what's needed. I'll experiment with it.
Yeah, I don't remember what the requirement is for optimal operation. I think two quarter-way counterpoises is enough. And Roy may remember that better. So that'll work. I know I operated a quarter-way ground, quarter-way vertical with one ground rod and no other counterpoise for many years in Canarsie, which I think has a fairly high water table, six blocks away from Canarsie Pier. Roy, I think you know the area I'm talking about. And the only band it worked reasonably well on was 40 meters, even though I got, I worked the world on 40 meters, but nobody really heard me on the higher frequencies with the antenna on the ground. And I eventually read an article saying, explaining the physics of it, that an antenna like that will work on 10 megahertz and below, but not above. And that was exactly what I observed, whatever it was worth. So anyway, it sounds like what you're doing is plausible and workable. Anyway, I'm going to be on the side for a few minutes. BB2BX.
Okay, very good, Frank. Any other comments before we move on to the next person? Okay, very good. Next person up is Wesley. I don't think we're going to get to all 10 points, so pick your favorite, and we'll see how things go.
Yeah, thanks, Shane. I'm going to try to speed up with whatever. So point number two was helical antenna, design small size of high-frequency HF helical antenna. Just a few words about it. The antenna consists of pointing on cylindrical surface with constant spacing between the turns. It is fed by a coaxial cable and is backed up by conducting ground plane. And is characteristic of helical antenna and various modification of it. If you want to say a few more words, Dr. Ray.
Basically, it's a slinky antenna. I'm sure people have seen many pictures, and a few of you out there have actually taken your metallic slinky and hooked it up to your transceiver and you know, threw it out the back window and tested it out a couple of times. So it's basically the same electronically as a slinky antenna.
Okay, the only difference is now this antenna is being used for HF and there are a number of attempts to have it from 3.5 megahertz to 10 meters. And what is important for it is it is a very much wideband antenna. So let's say 6 megahertz, 7 megahertz, depends from the frequency. So at 28.8 megahertz, that was 7 megahertz bandwidth. At 23.7, that was 6 megahertz bandwidth. I'm not going to the numbers up to 6, just tried to mention it. And at 28.378, that was 6.588, and whatsoever. So, for some guys who wants to operate at frequency, let's say 14 megahertz, that antenna would have 60 turns with the spacing on it, and the bandwidth would be 500 kilohertz. So that would be all about it. Let me go to the next one. Actually, I forgot. Hamvention. Hamvention 2025, sponsored by Dayton Amateur Radio Association, is May 16 to May 18. So if anybody wants to go there, it's an opportunity to buy the week or to be between the people like you and like me. The next one is... Actually, it started with the Recon 40 high-performance portable HF antenna, and I can say that this antenna was made absolutely amazing. It's American-made antenna, and those guys are good mechanics, but not so much anything else apart from this. Let's drop. The author of the video that I sent to Dr. Roy stated that, and precision is outstanding. So if you look at the telescopic mask and the seals and material use, it is just a dream that come true. But there is a but, and Dr. Roy is going to explain what is the but. Dr. Roy.
I'm not exactly sure what you're assuming is the but, but I just... mentioned in passing that a loaded coil on a non-resonant whip is a compromise antenna. If you don't want to have a true quarter wave 80 meter antenna on your fender, you get a ham stick, and it makes up for a lot of the shortness of the antenna length with a loading coil. Loading coils, unfortunately, are inefficient, especially when they're mechanically in the most stable position at the antenna feed. That's the highest current area. So it's, if you have something with insertion loss and you want to put it someplace, put it with the lowest current. Don't put it with the highest, but all these bottom-loaded antennas are bottom-loaded. It increases the Q, so the tunable band length is smaller. It decreases the radiation resistance, so any resistive insertion loss, it has a more profound effect on the efficiency. So, I mean, ham sticks are okay things if that's the only thing you can use, but you're certainly not going to go home with an 80-meter hamstick and use it as your base antenna in your house, because the efficiencies of those are about 1 or 2% on a good day. So that's, I think, what you're alluding to, that that loaded coil loaded at the base, non-resonant antennas.